You are now tuned into the Center Stage Podcast. Intended for musicians and music lovers alike, these are music conversations coming out of our world and meeting yours. I'm your host, AJ Valson, and thank you so much for tuning into the Center Stage Podcast, brought to you by Center Stage Music Center. Welcome to the world of CS. We've got so much to share with you. In last month's pilot episode, Veronica, the director of Center Stage, talked about the stories and people that make CS what it is today. One group of people she made a point to mention were the teachers.
In the process of building Center Stage, one of the best things that I've had to do is to meet all these amazing musicians and to be able to give them the opportunity to share their passion and to give them a platform for that has been awesome.
Today, I'm happy to present an interview I did back in the winter of this year with one of our former teachers, Kevin Theodore. Kevin was a piano teacher at CS from 2014 to 2016 and has been a full-time music producer since then. Our conversation includes stories of his time spent as a CS instructor, his artistic influences when he creates, as well as the work he's done with a handful of renowned musicians. This includes, but is not limited to, Anderson .Paak, Marlon Craft, and the late Mac Miller. Enjoy!
Kevin, thank you so much for making the time, man.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. How long has it been since you were at Center Stage?
I would say probably been almost 3 years now.
3 years?
Yeah.
And you were there for how long?
I was there from, I would say, like, late winter, early spring of 2014 to, like, fall 2016.
Got you.
Yeah.
So about, like, close to 2 years, 2-3 years.
Yeah. Wow. It's crazy. It feels, just because so much has happened since I got out of there, it feels like it was so much longer ago. But yeah, I guess it was like almost 2 years. That's really weird.
That's crazy. So can you, I know it's been a minute since I've been following you on Instagram, so you've just been like working nonstop on stuff that we're going to talk and get into. But from what you can start to remember about your time there, what's one thing that you can tie it into what you're doing now? Like anything? Musically, you know, it doesn't even need to be about the education aspect, but like what kind of built you up for like this current step that you're doing?
Well, I think one of the experiences I had at Center Stage that definitely kind of was helpful for what I do now is I guess the ability to connect with people and like make them feel comfortable in your environment and stuff, you know what I mean? Because like especially with like, you know, kids, a lot of them don't even know if they want to do music going into it. You know what I mean? And a lot of them like, or maybe might be kind of interested, but aren't, you know, like aren't fully sold on it yet. So, I mean, the big thing that, so basically your job, aside from teaching them these fundamentals, is also, you know, trying to instill within them a passion for music. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like getting them to see it's like, you know, if you're able to put in the work and do these certain things, like this is what you can do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then a lot of time, if they want that, they'll go for it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've had a lot of conversations like that too, especially with the ones that are like 13, 14, 15. Because
it's like a very impressionable like period of time. You know what I mean? So that's definitely like a make or break time for sure. Especially figuring out like what you're going to be passionate about.
Yes. And it's almost like hard to teach at that point because a lot of kids by that point have an understanding of, okay, this is like the extent of what I want to do or what I have done. You know, like more theory, like NISMA based stuff. It's like, this is something that I want to transition to. Like I have one kid like right now who I'm having that conversation with, and it's almost more pressure on me because it's like, I think to myself, like, well, I've never had an experience like this happen to me. Like I kind of found it on my own.
Yeah.
So like, how do I recreate that? So like coming like with different material, like every single week to figure out like, you know, different ways to like arrange and like understand how songs work. I feel like it's really important. So I feel you.
Well, I think, I mean, in my experience, I found that the best way to kind of go about it is just to hear more about what their experiences are like, you know, like listen to his life, his experiences, the way he sees things, music he listens to and what he likes, and then find kind of your world within that from an educational standpoint and just try to be like, okay, this is how, you know, this artist went about creating or arranging this thing. Because then when you put it in his world and he feels like he can relate to it, or at the very least, like, really connect and enjoy it, then he's going to want to do it more, you know?
Yeah, that was great advice. I appreciate that.
I mean, I'm just kind of like thinking off the cuff of like how I go about
it. But it's solid, and it does make a lot of sense, because you always have to make sure you meet people where they're at.
Yeah. Like, I remember one of the lessons that I taught at Center Stage, like right before I made the transition into producing full time, is there was a kid who's like probably around his teens, and like, I remember this was before Frank Ocean came out with Blonde and with Endless. So, you know, so people were really still, you know, waiting for that release to come out. So we went through one of his songs from Channel Orange, and I basically just talked him through I was teaching him about chord structure at the time.
Gotcha.
So, I was just talking to him about the structure behind these kind of chords, and like what kind of chords he was using. And a lot of it is seven chords. So it's like, you know, it's like a really nice introduction to that. You know what I mean? Because then he's really going to listen in, because he likes the song anyway. Yeah. Like, oh, that's a seven chord there. That's a seven chord there. Mm-hmm. You know, like
sevens can unlock so much. Like,
oh yeah, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love doing that. Like finding certain like harmonic structures that I want to introduce a student to, and then finding a piece of music that that they can relate to.
Yes.
Like very recently, like we were talking earlier about Negro Swan by Blood Orange.
Yes.
He has a song called Nappy Wonder that has, it's all major triads. But the way he places it makes it sound like it's very dissonant and very weird, but it's all major triads.
Right.
Yeah, it's really cool. So so as an ear training exercise, I had my cousin kind of analyze the music and try to find out what major triads they were. You know what I mean? Because so it's just a matter of finding out where where the root was.
Because, of course, you know, because they're all in root position.
Yeah, they're all root position. They're all major triad. So it's like that was like a nice intro into triadic work too.
That's what's up. Yeah, no, I think that's great. And I myself, like, on the ways to work, like trying to come up with ideas for students like this, because there's more than one for sure. Yeah. I'll listen to instrumentals and be like, okay, like for the simpler cadences, I can pull out something like this and be like, find that far as the numbers and that type of thing.
But it almost comes about naturally sometimes too, because like, especially once you come to the point where like you're really getting to know this student, it's like, oh, you like this? Or it's like hanging out, you know, it's like if we were hanging out, we were like showing music back and forth, and be like, oh, you like this? Here, let me show you that, you know?
Exactly. When did you have the mental clarity to be like, okay, I'm going to do this thing full time? And like, when was that between when you actually started producing full time? Or was it kind of like all in the same moment?
Good question. So I think it was around 2015. I was touring a lot with this one particular band at the time. And I can't, some managers and some labels had approached us before, and then there were certain talks also of the lead singer doing her own solo stuff, and it wasn't necessarily set in stone yet, but that was just enough to like freak me out, because it's like, okay, if this person, you know, if they go on their own, what's gonna happen to me,
right?
You know what I mean? So like and I've already been in situations where like I had been in bands that were like doing like extremely well at one point, and then the next minute would just totally like fizzle out. Like, it happens. Mm-hmm. So I remember just thinking, it's like, you know, I need something that I can have for myself.
Yep.
But I also realized that like I'd never had that before either. You know what I mean? Because like I think because you spend such a long time just like doing things to adhere to a certain rubric that you never realize like, even within something that you're passionate about, it's like, what do you want out of this?
Yep.
You know what I mean?
And you were doing stuff with other people anyway, so it's
By that point, I had been, you know, writing in a bunch of different bands and stuff like that, and like found myself being like one of the primary writers in each group because of that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, whether or not I was like the best player in the room. So I just started figuring out, okay, so like, what is it that I want to do, you know, and what is something that I feel like I excel at that I can build on. So I knew for me it was writing. So mm-hmm. I just started paying a lot more attention to song form, and then I started like
writing in terms of lyrics or song structure.
Song structure, yeah, gotcha. Yeah, song and some lyric work as well. But for me, like strong song structure was like really important, because that really depicts like the flow of the song and how well you can keep a listener engaged in your music.
Yes.
And that's going to really come into play. That really came into play later for me when I started doing music for like commercials and for film and stuff too.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Cause that's totally what it's all about as well. But yeah, so I started, and then, funny enough, around that time I started, kind of building, setting up classes for composition as well, you know, at Center Stage, you know, not only to be able to just take what I know and show it to the youngsters as well, but also to like really challenge myself to develop a deep understanding of that structure and what the functions of the structures were and how I can use that to my advantage at any given moment when I'm writing my own music, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like what we were talking about, just like as far as trying certain things and just not being afraid to just go into that exploratory process, you know?
Definitely.
Like through teaching.
I agree with you. And it's funny that you mentioned the composition class, because as I had students who were coming to me with more like, I understand music on a basic level, help me make it on a more personalized level, that inspired me to like start building a curriculum and like mapping out, when am I teaching this? You know, how much of it am I teaching, and what can I pull from like real world examples that can help bring it on?
Yeah. Cause I mean, everyone can do something from an instinctual place, you mm-hmm. know what I mean? But it's to be able to like take that information and convey it to someone in a way that they'll get and come through like a week, 2 weeks later with something tangible, you know, you have to really understand what you're doing in a different way.
Definitely. I agree. So once you got into the mindset of, okay, Kevin's a producer now, or Kevin has to start acting like a producer and thinking like a producer and have producer tendencies. And then when you made the transition to do it full time, by that time, had you already kind of figured out like a sound, or are you always working with different artists?
I feel like I hadn't figured out like a sound, like my sound within that probably until like maybe the past couple of months.
Mm-hmm.
I knew I was able to build up a at least good enough skill set to give the artist whatever it is that they wanted. But now I feel like I'm at a point where I can also have my own very personal imprint
yep.
within that music. But it's not intrusive, but that contributes to the music in a really interesting way, I think.
Right. So how would you describe how that looks in its current version?
Oh, that's a good question. I think the way that's actually a really good question. Well, I think I've combined one of the things I feel like I always try to do when I'm creating parts, even when I was still in bands, is I would try to find ways to use little subtle elements of sophistication, ways of harmony, or maybe sometimes even the rhythm. And just kind of just give just enough of it to so that the average listener can, you know, it's not too much to take in, but at the same time it's enjoyable and it's different and it's going to take them to
right.
a different place to where they've been.
So like Grace Notes almost, where it's like, you know, you have your basic chord structure, but every now and then you got these like little frills that kind of just take it up.
Yeah, yeah, you can see it that way as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's something that I would always try to do, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I just started reaching a point where I was not only doing that like harmonically as far as like what chords I was playing, but also doing it sonically as well, while like creating certain textures, whether it be in the drums or whether it be in a string part or a guitar part, you know what I mean, that just gives the instrument a different timbre than maybe what they had imagined or what they had like heard before, you know.
Definitely.
And I think I've been taking full advantage of that lately. And
that's cool.
I've been coming up with some stuff that I really like, you know.
That's awesome. Who are you listening to from a production perspective that really inspires that?
Sicko Mode is like changed my life. Like really? That, yeah, that I think that's that beat's insane. Cause that's like it's one of those songs.
Three beats in one.
Exactly. Cause they found a way to break all the rules, you know what I mean, as right. far as like song structure and as far as like sticking to a certain aesthetic or thematic tapestry.
Yeah.
And it still destroyed the charts for months. Yep. You know what I'm saying? It's insane. It's ridiculous to me. Yep. So like I love seeing
and he did that in Stargazing as well, where he had like two beats.
Yeah.
There was, and I dare I say there was at least one or two more that have some beat switches like in that record
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, man. And I feel like I almost feel like that kind of approach is the not necessarily the future, but I think it's definitely something that's going to be explored more in depth going forward. I don't know if it'll be like the kind of approach, but I definitely mm-hmm. think we're definitely going to see more of that in mm-hmm. the future.
I mean, we have started to see it, but it's
Tierra Wax album. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, because that whole like in her recent work, like that's like very much like a thing where like it's like one video, but like the beats are like constantly switching up. Just when you're mm-hmm. you're getting settled into one, she takes you into a completely different world,
right?
You know,
yeah. There definitely have been some, like, at least for me, what I listen to, some deep cuts that definitely have beat switches. But I think, given the brand of Travis Scott and given what he was trying to do with it, especially, I remember seeing something that the album that he put out prior to, he was really trying to get that to win a Grammy, and like it didn't, so it fueled him to like put something like that even more. I think that's dope. But
I mean, it's also the fact that something like that succeeded as much as it did in the mainstream.
Oh yeah,
that's absolutely. The crazy part.
Absolutely,
because yeah, we've all seen beat switches before, yeah. but like that. Like,
but you can also make the argument that if Drake was not on this record, then it probably wouldn't.
Oh, absolutely, but that's, you know, that's also not
it's part of the
new
process.
Either. Yeah,
it's part of the process.
I mean, it's the same thing when Elvis brought Big Mama Thornton's song Hound Dog, you know, and then that became like much more of like, you know, during like the 60s and during the time when there was so much like racial tension and they were trying to like an R&B like was only being listened to like one particular audience, you know what I mean? Like suddenly, granted, at the expense of like a lot of these songs being stolen from artists like Little Richard, like at the same time, like you know, R&B was just becoming more of a mainstream thing. Just recently, just in the past 10 years, hip hop just became like one of the biggest, you know, influences in popular music.
It's not the
biggest.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in a time in the 90s, it could barely make it into the charts.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So, at a certain point, for better or for worse, you know, there are certain figures, certain mediums that take these sounds, these concepts and make it more socially palatable, you know? Yep.
I agree.
For better or for worse.
I agree. No, I completely agree. And I do think about the relevance of hip hop now versus then a lot, because it is absolutely true. And it's so interesting, like navigating the nuances of those conversations, because at the end of the day, you can see the impact of hip hop not only with the sounds, but also the phrases.
Yeah.
You know, like we think about YOLO, we think about, you know, so many, like, especially with Drake, and as far as Drake and Lil Wayne are concerned, like those two guys alone have created a lot of sayings that are repeated for times to come, and that's credited to hip hop.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about records that have beat switches. I've been listening to the Pinata album a lot lately, Madlib and Freddie Gibbs.
Oh, yeah, I haven't gotten around that.
Yeah, yet. I mean, obviously Madlib, but Freddie Gibbs is very, very consistent, and there's a lot of he goes like in the crates. It's very, there's a lot of lo-fi elements, there's a lot of, you know, straight up sample elements. There is a very brilliant sample that has BJ Chicago Kid on the hook. Fantastic. It's just like fantastic all around, but there are some beat switches in there. I just think, like, as you said, what Sicko Mode did was unprecedented on so many levels, and I think it's only now that it went off of, and I think it broke a record recently, or like tied a record,
probably
something insane like that.
I believe it.
Something insane like that.
Yeah, but Sicko Mode, like, like changed my life, man. Yeah,
so who's producing on that? So we have Take Heat, like, for sure.
Yeah,
everybody knows that. You listen to the song, you hear that. But who else is on it? Because I saw the credits and it's like deep.
It's long, man. Yeah. It's deep. Yeah, there's a lot of people involved in that. Like, I remember looking it up a while back and just like seeing a lot of names and stuff. It's like very, that. Very yeah, deep.
Because you also have Swae Lee on there.
Yes,
you have a Sheck West sample. Like so much stuff going on there. Well, what other sounds are really inspiring? Like, what?
I love one of my favorite producers. He's not like a wide. I don't know if how much of a widely known producer he is, but it's always been Adrian Young. Mm. He did the music for, along with Ali Shaheed Muhammad, he did the music for Luke Cage for seasons 1 and 2.
Gotcha.
On Netflix. And he worked with Kendrick on To Pimp a Butterfly. Like, he's just yes. been like a really big force in the hip-hop scene. And like, he's got this like kind of psychedelic soul aspect to like everything that he does. And it's also, you can tell he's like a big like film person by the instrumentation behind his music, and also yes. the way he composes. Because there's a lot of I've seen a lot of interviews, he talks about how one of his biggest influences is like Italian movies from the 70s. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So I didn't know that at the time when I was first listening to him, but I immediately was like really like kind of grabbed by that, and like that's always kind of stuck with me. So yeah, he's a big influence into the way I produce, especially for my own music.
Right.
That's awesome. And then let's see. Yeah, that's like a really big one for sure. I think also like depending on the music, like depending on like how heavy it is. I mean, like metal's been like a huge thing for me, mm-hmm. too, just because of like my experiences like being on the road with like a metal band and stuff like that. And shout out to Mark Lambert, you know.
Yeah, he's the one that put me onto that.
Yeah.
It's very different, but I mean, there are some metal subgenres that growing up influence like what I do as well.
Yeah.
So I feel like having an eclectic palette is very important.
Yeah, I feel like, and I feel like I'm probably like, I don't know. I keep telling this to people, but I honestly feel like there's certain similarities into the groove based metal that you can hear in like bands like Meshuggah or something like that, that exists within even like trap music. You know what I mean?
Yes. Yes.
And I've been taking full advantage of that. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I also love like old school punk rock, like Fishbone, like Bad Brains, like all that stuff is like a huge influence for me too.
Gotcha.
Like raw, just like gritty stuff, but also just like combining it with like maybe like sweeter elements as well, like harmonies that you might hear on impressionist classical pieces, like with composers like Ravel. Like Ravel's probably one of my favorite classical composers, and Debussy and Fauré, you know what I mean? Like, wow. I love like kind of borrowing from those kind of like harmonic tapestries as well. Yeah. You know,
so much of what you said kind of ties into all of that, because you're crossing a lot of paths that a lot of people wouldn't dare cross because of rules and things like that, but you've learned to break them, and I think that's fantastic.
I think that's the best way, man.
Yep. Talk about some of the highlights ever since you started getting into production.
Okay. I mean, the craziest recent one was like, so I ended up playing Wurlitzer on this Mac Miller track called Come Back to Earth. Mm-hmm. It was a pretty amazing experience, like getting to work with him. And I feel like working with him like really opened my, that's like one of the key moments that like really opened my mind right. to like just what you can do like with a composition, even like within something like hip hop or rap or something like that.
Right.
And just a certain attention and sensitivity that he had to like each individual part and like all the instruments. It was like,
right.
It was pretty inspiring and like,
wow.
It was incredible. Yeah.
So
and he was just such a nice dude too.
Right. Yeah. And that's what I keep hearing. So talking specifically about the song arrangement, when you were playing Wurlitzer on there, which is like keys basically, are you adding your own touch to it, or is he arranging it so detailed that he's telling you like kind of like where to go, or like
there'd be certain moments, like if I played something that he really liked, he'd be like, oh, you know, definitely, yeah, play that again there, right? You know what I mean? Gotcha. But for the most part, no, like they just told me the chord structure of it, and like, cool. I probably listened through it twice, and then, you know, went into the room and just like kind of played through it. The one really fun fact about that evening was so the sustain pedal was broken.
Wow.
It did not work. So, and you know, you have to play all this lush stuff. So it's like, okay, yeah, how do I do this without a sustain pedal? Yeah. So I had to go, it was like legato to the max. Like, jeez. Like everything was like itsy bitsy spider and all over the keys, man.
Your fingers literally stuck to the keyboard.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Wow. So along with like the nerves of like doing like, this is like, at this point, this is like my first like major record label session ever.
Right.
You know what I mean? But also the sustain pedal's broken now. Yeah. So it was just like, I had to like really just do what I could to just keep it together mentally.
Right.
And
did
also
you get one shot at that?
Yeah, you do. Yeah. So and you know, I'm glad like I came out of there and went well. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Nah, man, it's fantastic.
Appreciate it, man.
I even listened to it, like there's this guy on YouTube named Slater. He does mixes of songs slowed in reverb.
Okay.
So I hear it on there.
I think I heard that. I think I remember seeing that around too.
What's your first reaction to stuff like that?
It was crazy. I mean, the thing that messed me up the most, it was I was getting ready to hop on a train to do a session at Universal, and on my way there, I hear a guy in the subway playing the song on guitar.
Wow.
That's insane to me. It's like it became so much of a standard, it travels
far,
that like people are just like playing, doing covers of it like that. Like that was really nuts to me.
Yeah, man. I mean, especially I remember the day that I found out about his passing, and I remember I messaged you about this a couple weeks ago. There's a shop in Farmingdale that has this thing on vinyl.
The vinyl, yeah.
And it's just, you know, thinking about the stories that are tied to it, not only like now, but even before personally, it's just like, man, like this thing travels very, very far. Yeah. Past the aux, Illmind.
Yes.
I'm very curious about that.
That was a lot of fun, man. I mean, I heard about Illmind through Marlon Craft, actually. He's one of the rappers I'm working on for his upcoming record. I believe so. Illmind, I think, has worked with him as well to a certain capacity.
Illmind has a very detailed rap sheet.
Yeah, definitely. And that was kind of like my intro to him, because I got hit up one day to do a session with Marlon at a studio in the city. And so I came there, did what I had to do, and I had the pleasure of working with him like several times since, you know. And they were telling me a lot about him and how he has this event. And I got in touch with one of his go-to producers in LA, Shan, who is like, you know, she's like a friend of mine, like someone I collaborate with quite a bit nowadays. And nice. she was one who originally told me about Pass the Aux. So I was like, all right, you know, I'll check it out, you know. So, you know, I looked him up and everything, and I was like, okay, word, Illmind, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I signed up and I came through, and it was a really inspiring event, just because, what was the big thing? The big thing that really appealed to me was the fact that I feel like he had a similar kind of coming up as I feel like I've had recently, where, you know, in high school, I just didn't really know what I wanted to do or anything like that. Yep. I didn't do particularly great in school. I'm sure like most of the people who knew me weren't expecting me to like succeed even remotely to the degree that I did. You right. know what I mean? So, I mean, like he always talks about how like, you know, 5-10 years ago, he was like living at his parents' house. He wasn't making any money, and he was just trying to like keep his head down and just, you know, just do everything he can to just make the best stuff that he could, so that one day, you know, he would be able to create a better situation for himself. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I resonate with that strongly, just because I feel like that I had a very similar experience, you know, where I felt like, you know, go, especially like coming from like a Haitian American like background, you know what I mean? Like the last thing your parents want you to hear is that you're going, that you're going into music full time. You know what I mean?
It's very, very foreign.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, and you know, everyone telling you that you can't do it and that you shouldn't do it and that like, and just taking all the L's along with that, you know what I mean? Like, but just keeping your head down and staying focused, you know, like, and now it's not even until like, it wasn't until maybe like 1 or 2 years ago that like people are really like, oh, okay, so he is doing, this is happening. Right. Okay. You know,
this is a real thing.
Yeah. And now, you know, it's going from like, I remember like people, there used to be some people who used to like mock me, you know what I mean? Like, oh, you know, are you going to be big? You're going to go to Hollywood. And it's like, oh, actually, yes, I have been to Hollywood. Yeah, like
a lot of times.
And now people are like, yo, you know, when is the Grammys, bro? You know? So
yeah,
it's just really, it's funny to me, but I resonate strongly with that. But I also love that he's using his experience to inspire other people.
Yep.
And he's doing it from a very real and honest and just like humble standpoint. Okay. So like, I love the fact that not only is he dope, but he's like this humble guy that genuinely wants to like help other people. So
definitely.
I was like, I'm with it. I'm there. So
yeah,
I digress. So I went to Pass the Aux.
Where was it at?
It was in some random like kind of it looked like, it felt like a rehearsal space or something like that. You know, it was in it was in Jersey City.
Oh, true.
So so I went out there and stuff, and you know, I saw like a bunch of other people there. There's probably about 30 people in the room. And I went there with my cousin who's also, he's like an aspiring producer himself.
Nice.
So Illmind walks in and we each kind of like play him a beat, right? And he'll give his insight on it and stuff like that, and like he'll give his 2 cents on like what you could do next and stuff. So I come up and I show mine. I made sure going in that I had at least 10 different beats that I could choose from. You know what I mean? All different styles. Cause I wanted to like read the room to see like what was being played.
True, true.
So I realized there was a lot of trap going on, like a lot of trap. So I was like, all right, let me switch it up. So I picked, like a really weird eclectic, kind of psychedelic, beat that had elements of modern production in it. So I played that for him and like, he really liked that beat. And then I played him another one that was like straight up like boom bap, but like that had this kind of like ethereal, like cerebral kind of backdrop in the form of like these synth arpeggios. Mm. And he really liked that too. He was like, he gave me a lot of compliments for it too. You know, we connected with like a couple of like mutual like colleagues that we've worked with too. So it ended up being like a really cool experience.
Oh, just like, with your time like producing full time?
Yeah. And I mean, just like, and also just like having like worked with a lot of the same people, you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
Like, so like I ended up like realizing that like we were in some similar circles. So that was like, that was kind of like a cool realization. Wow. Too, you know?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, it was a really cool experience and like definitely hoping to, share space with him again, one way or the other.
How does he end those sessions? After everybody shows beats and everybody gets to know each other and he talks about his story, like how does he wrap up those sessions?
Well, for us, he wrapped it up by just, you know, talking about how moved he was by like hearing everyone's music and like how he, you know, he just wants everyone to support each other and and to help each other succeed. Because at the end of the day, you know, that's going to be the thing that helps you succeed is just like, having a community, you know, having a team of people that just, that is there for each other, through, you know, through the ups and the downs, you know what I mean? And you know, who's building with you and inspiring you and being inspired by them, you know? And I think that's already gone to happen for me already. Like, there was a producer named Harry Otaku who I made a beat with recently. It's like bananas. Like, not to toot my own horn.
Yo,
toot. When you know what I'm saying?
When you know it's good, like, you know it's good, man.
Yeah. So
sometimes it's just like you listen to like, this is like just straight stupid.
I've never heard it be like that. Yeah. So I'm really excited about that. And I have a couple of sessions coming up this month with some people from Pass the Aux as well. So
very nice. I think that's super cool. How personal he made it.
Yeah.
I was trying to understand. I haven't really caught up with his content lately, but when I saw him kick off this announcement and like he has a lot of very Gary V-esque content that he puts out and things like that. Like when I see, like,
I think he's friends with Gary Vee.
Like he's been on his podcast show. So I've seen like that connection and just kind of seen like the direction that he's going, the intentionality that he's taking. It really makes sense, and that's why I asked that question, because I kind of wanted to tie it up, and I think that's very impressive. You know, he's had, I think some of his more recent hits have been on the Scorpion record by Drake. So like to see him go that high and that far as like the work that he's done and be able to like go to Jersey City to like connect with some local producers, I think that's amazing. So anything else that's been going on like with full-time production? Because, you know, at first glance, people are just like, oh, they don't expect you. And as you said, you've kind of alluded to that. They don't expect you to have like the amount of like hectic schedule that you have. But especially as you've doubled down and like created a brand around good music, what have been some of the other experiences that have really like confirmed that you've just like straight up enjoyed? I mean, it could be a collection or like a person that you enjoy working with.
Yeah, I mean, let me see. There's one really, really dope experience that that happened that I can't talk about yet.
But okay,
you'll hear about it.
Hey, I'm sure we will, man.
Yeah.
We'll have to follow up again with another interview.
Yeah, bro. It's yeah. Someone's gonna be late. Cool. But what was I gonna say? But I mean, some of the other really inspiring experiences that happened was, I guess another experience is, this was the same week actually as, when I had the session with Mac Miller like a few years ago. So, you know, I was stressing about like the sustain pedal thing, even though it went well. And then, the next day, you know, I get off of work in LA because we have a branch in LA as well. So usually I'll be there during the day and then I'll do sessions like all night afterwards. So then I'm going back to my Airbnb. I'm like, okay, you know what? Last night was a pretty late night. I'm just going to chill today. Then I get another phone call from like the same people. They're like, yo, come to the studio. I'm like, I'm there, you know? So then I go there and Anderson .Paak is there. You know what I mean? So then, you know, we fast forward and like they're setting up all these instruments. They're setting up a Rose and a bass and everything. And like,
what year was this, by the way?
That's a really good question. I can't remember exactly when it happened. It wasn't long after I started like producing full time, though.
So somewhere between 2015 and 2017.
I would say even sooner than that. Probably 2015. Honestly. 2015. Probably. Okay. But yeah, so what happened? Yeah. So I was there. So I'm like, holy crap. Like this is about to happen right now.
Right.
Yeah, this is crazy. And then, you know, I get introduced like, oh, hey, this is Omos Keith. You know, he worked on Channel Orange. Mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, hey, you know, mm-hmm. So then Anderson .Paak comes into the room and I'm doing everything I can to just keep my cool. So I'm like, hey, bro, I'm Kevin. So then he looked like he knew that I knew who he was, but he was just like, oh, what's up, man? You know, AP. So I'm like, so, you know, it was cool. So like, right. we hung out for a bit, like we watched some like funny videos on YouTube, and then we just got to like playing. So then, so I think it was me, it was my buddy Jeff and Omos were in the live room just like playing stuff like that and like just trying a bunch of different grooves. And then we all have headphones on, like, because everything's being recorded. All of a sudden my headphones, I hear Anderson .Paak's voice. He's like, yo, that's hard. So then I'm like, okay. So then he just starts rapping over it.
As you're playing that groove.
As we're playing. It's all being recorded. So, like, as I'm playing the groove, like, he's rapping over what I'm playing.
Right.
So it's like I'm listening to the record while making the record.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was really...
Because they wanted to record everything live.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And, like, you know, those guys record, like all kinds of music all the time. So it's not the kind of thing where, like, I would know when something like that would come out or if it would ever come out. But, like, that was, like, definitely, like, a pretty...
You never know. You look back on your files and be like... I remember this joint. Let me put this out.
Well, I just remember afterwards, like, you know, we're putting our stuff away. And then Anderson comes into the room. He comes up to me, shakes my hand, like, kind of gives me a hug. He's like, yo, man, that was dope. You know, I was like, word. You know?
Wild.
Yeah,
bro.
Yeah.
That's wild.
Yeah, that was crazy. So, yeah, that was a day later. So, like, It was like one of the craziest weeks ever, man.
Wow.
But then at that point, you know, that amongst like a couple of other experiences were like the things that made me realize that, you know, it's not necessarily just about, you know, having certain facilitation on, you know, your instrument of choice or whatever your craft is, but it's also just making sure that you not only bring who you are into that, but embracing, you know, making sure you embrace who you are too. Right. You know what I mean? Because like whatever, like that's going to be the thing that makes what you do unique.
When you're traveling to like LA and back, like where else do you travel, by the way? Like anywhere else or just LA?
Since not touring, mostly those places.
Okay.
Yeah, usually I usually try to hit LA a couple of times a year and just right. try to put in as much work as possible out there, and then I'll come here, do the same thing.
Yep. You know? Yep. It's a lifestyle. So how do you experience inspiration while going back and forth, whether it's like, you know, Ubering to one place or taking a flight off to somewhere? Because as you said before, might have been before we started recording, but you are always waking up to make something of your own. So how do you keep yourself inspired?
Honestly, I think a lot of it is I listen to a lot of different music, but also just from experiences I have with other people, honestly. Like that's the great thing about collaborating, is just like you're constantly meeting other people who approach things completely different from you, you know, and all these different approaches are valid. That's the beauty about composing and about producing. Honestly, there's a thousand ways to do one thing.
Yep.
You know what I mean? So because of that, there's truly room for originality in your approach. Because at the end of the day, it's just about making dope music, you know?
Yep.
So I think that's the thing that really inspires me whenever I get out there. I think also just having, you know, giving yourself room to just kind of enjoy life and having interesting experiences, that tends to be a source of inspiration as well. I think a lot of people who get in the grind, they get caught up in just like locking themselves in their room, in their mm-hmm. like studios and just working all the time. And sometimes you just got to get outside, you know, just mm-hmm. like,
definitely,
you know, and experience stuff. Like I remember like when I was in school, I was listening to like Miles Davis's music all the time. And like a lot of the songs that he would write, they were usually inspired by personal experiences that he had or about like people that he's encountered, you know,
mm-hmm. his truth.
Yeah.
And he's sharing it. And I think that's so powerful because you notice the difference of how people react when you share your truth versus where you share something, because you might think it will get you some form of attention. Like in my personal music experience, when I started putting out stuff and I didn't fully understand like what I was capable of, I was just kind of like putting my hand in a bunch of different things. I didn't get the response that I thought that I was going to get. And so it was kind of hard at first. But once I realized that like, oh, my truth is actually this, like this piano right here, like I can play music like this, have no words, and it could resonate with people way more than if I spoke. And like, that's the truth that a lot of people have to give back to. Like your style with production is just so eclectic and people resonate with that, like Illmind.
Yeah, but I mean, I think at the end of the day, like it's all about who you are as a person.
Yeah.
Because all these things, like that's another thing I'm realizing recently. It's not necessarily about what a given medium can do for you. It's about what your experiences and what your thought process does when it's channeled through that medium.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So like, yeah, like who you are as a person, like your psyche, that's the true mm-hmm. source of that kind of like musical, mm-hmm. like, originality or, you know, whatever you want to, or, you know, musical kind of, creativeness or whatever you want to call it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. And
I didn't realize that until like just recently.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
No, definitely. There's some people, like I said earlier, with this type of stuff that I was trying to make before, or just musicians or artists or people in general who are trying to fit a mold that they know they shouldn't fit.
Yeah,
that's definitely what I mean by
like embracing who you are is like such an for me has been an enormous part of like the creative process. Like I feel like I've changed personally since doing that, and I feel like my styles have like my style has developed exponentially since then, even just within the past couple of months.
Definitely. I agree. Yo, Kevin, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, man. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
Hey, my name is Veronica.
And I'm Angela. And we wanted to thank you again for listening to another episode of the CS Podcast.
Before you head out, we want to make sure you are aware of our show notes in your podcast app, which give you links to everything we reference here, from our magazine to our blog, as well as our social media links.
Also, we have enabled listener support for those who want to take a step further in supporting our creative process. If you enjoyed what you heard, simply leaving a review goes a long way.
Once again, thanks for listening. Catch you on the next episode of the Center Stage Podcast.